Hello, this is the Overtones Podcast, a show about the beauty of diversity within Christianity today. I'm Joe, and I'm a church worker.
I'm Christy, and I'm a church historian.
And I'm Lorraine. I'm a Christian teacher. On our show, we talk to academics, professionals, and full-time church workers to explore lesser-heard voices that are shaping the church today.
Right, so my story is about poo. So brace yourselves. You've talked about nuclear science. You've talked about the history of Easter. Now we're going to talk about poo. I've got two kids, Jonah and Eli, both preschool age. At the time of this story, they were 2 and 4. Mum had already gone to work. I was getting them up in the morning. We'd done breakfast and I went to put the washing on, and our washing machine's just in another room. So I left the room for about 30 seconds. I came back into the room. Both kids are gone.
Oh no.
I hear, "Daddy, Daddy." So I run to the downstairs toilet. Kid number one is on the toilet. "Doing a poo, doing a poo." Okay, where's Eli? "He's upstairs doing a poo." So I run up the stairs. Eli is on the toilet doing a poo. At this age, if you're not sure where, they're able to get themselves to the toilet, but they need help with the cleanup.
Okay.
So I run upstairs, check on Eli. He's okay. He's doing a poo. I hear calling from downstairs, run down the stairs, and I can, the only way to describe it is Jonah is now off the toilet, half naked in a downward dog position, waiting to be cleaned up. Clean up Jonah, sort him out, wash his hands, run upstairs to calls of "Daddy, Daddy," and Eli is sat there. He's tried to clean himself. He has poo on his hands. He has poo on the toilet seat. He has poo on a giant bit, like half a toilet roll that he's holding. Poo everywhere. Poo everywhere. So, you know, clean all of that up. Sorted. And this is all before about 7:30 in the morning. So that's just a little snapshot for anyone who's not a parent, what parenting can be like. But the contrast to this, I guess, is in the same day, I go out somewhere with the kids. You know, I've made them breakfast. I've got them dressed. I've done the washing. I've done all the things that the stay-at-home parent, you know, does. We go out somewhere, I won't name it to save them the embarrassment, and one of the first comments you get is, "Oh, hi, is it Mum's day off today?"
Aww.
And that's a snapshot of being a dad who looks after the kids. Is it Mum's day off today? Oh, Daddy daycare today, is it? Oh, is Mum not working today? Yeah, so that's the story, really, just to give a very brief snapshot of what it's like being a parent, but also being sometimes the attitude of people. And I was that day going, if you'd have known what I dealt with this morning, you might have had a bit more sympathy.
Indeed.
It was probably after a not disturbed night as well.
That'd be
part of the course. There we go. So that's the story.
Thank you, Robin. We're really excited to be talking to you today.
About poo.
Yes, about poo and everything else that is involved in being a stay-at-home parent. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to our audience for joining us today for another episode of the Overtones Podcast. We have Robin Langdon with us, part-time church worker, part-time stay-at-home dad, and we're really looking forward to hearing more from him in a moment. Robin, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to be a stay-at-home parent, what that decision-making process looked like for your family?
Yeah, so me and my wife, Charlotte, we've got two kids, Jonah and Eli. When we were expecting Jonah, we talked about it. And the first thing really is that we strongly believe, and I particularly believe, that when they're in those early years, the parent should be at least 50% of the caregiver. Particularly as any parent, but also particularly as Christians, you have this one opportunity to really give them the start in life that you want. And if you're not with a parent half the time, then they're getting conflicting views, conflicting ideas, not just about beliefs, but about behaviour, attitudes, all sorts of things. So basically I said, I think nursery is great. They do go to nursery 2 days a week. I think it's a really good experience for them. Particularly, we crossed over quite a lot with the COVID pandemic, so being able to be in a room full of people was quite novel for them. But I said, if they go to nursery 3 days in childcare was my limit. And we ended up going for 2 days in nursery and 1 day with my mother-in-law, who is brilliant and is a bit like a third parent, really, in terms of, you know, she has the same rules, the same Christian beliefs, everything. So that works fine. And then 4 days out of seven with us. So obviously the weekend, and then we said, well, that leaves 2 days to cover. So and that's where we were sort of started with getting them to be with a parent for sure. More of the week than they weren't, basically. In terms of the roles, my wife loves her job. She's very good at her job. She's a career woman. I had 2 jobs, I think, at the time. Didn't like one of them. And I'm always, you know, I like being a parent. I was very happy to be the parent who took the responsibility for them for 2 days of the week. Yeah, it worked well job-wise because I could sort of drop one job and keep the other one. Yeah, I think parenting is about using your strengths. And I think that's what we did. We've used our strengths there, complementing each other, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Robin, thank you for sharing a little bit of what your daily life looks like at the moment. And then we have breakfast, and obviously pooping is just part of the part of the routines.
Yeah.
And obviously you have your part-time job as a church worker. What is your kind of 24/7 looks like?
I mean, in a particular, I don't know if every stay-at-home parent does the same, but you've got all the general jobs. I try to make, if I'm having a good day, the washing will be done, the washing up will be done, the house will be, the surfaces wiped and things as well. So it's sort of daily chores and things like that. If I'm having a bad day and the children are still alive at the end, then that's fine. There's no expectation that anything will be done other than keeping the children alive and well. But on a good day, it's doing all the extra chores. But in terms of the kids, it's, well, you need to get out of the house. I've got 2 boys. They're boisterous. So generally speaking, you know, we'll get up, we'll have breakfast. After breakfast, they tend to be okay. They go and play. They're sort of satisfied. They're not grumpy anymore. They've had sleep. They've had food. They sort of will play. And then we pile in the car and go somewhere. Go out to various places, sometimes organise groups, sometimes going just to nice places outside, depending on the weather. The summer is a lot easier.
Mm. Oh, I'm sure.
The summer. I like the summer. And when it's not raining and it's not cold, and you can just go out, walk out the door and find somewhere nice to go.
The world is your playground at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go. So we go to the library quite a lot. Our kids love books and they love reading. Mm. So then it's back home again. They watch a bit of television whilst I'm getting dinner. After dinner, we have a short bit of time, and then it's get them in the bath and get them into bed. That's kind of a standard day.
Mm.
You know, leaving the house can sometimes take half an hour.
Right.
Get the kids dressed, get their shoes on, put their shoes back on when they've taken them off.
Mm.
All that sort of thing.
Children rarely like shoes. Is that true? I don't know many children that like shoes.
Ours just find it funny to take them off.
Oh,
they're just cheeky. They just think it's funny to take their shoes off.
Wind up, Dad.
Particularly in the car. You'll be driving somewhere in the car and they'll go, look in the back, look in the back. And I can't look in the back, I'm driving, but I know what you've done because I heard the Velcro. So I was going to say, our two are also quite chatty. So quite often we'll walk out the house to get in the car. Our neighbour will be on the drive washing his car or something, and then we'll go, look, it's Dave, let's chat to Dave, and then it'll be another 10 minutes.
Of course. Very sociable children.
So we should have their good days and their bad days.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Like, what would the kind of things that happen that might frustrate you, that you might categorise as a bad day?
Okay, so, I mean, first of all, so a good day is just a day where we're all happy all day, they do as they've asked, they don't upset each other, and everything's sorted. A bad day will be, generally it stems from them either being tired,
hmm,
or overthinking sometimes, anticipation. So those sorts of things, if something's coming up or they're just tired, or sometimes they're just children and they're going through some kind of developmental phase. But a bad day will be, so the other day we went out, it was supposed to be a lovely morning, this was a Saturday, it wasn't even a day I was on my own, and we just had some building work done, we had a new kitchen, so it's the first time in 4 weeks we've been able to have eggy bread. You don't know what eggy bread is, you have to cook it in a frying pan, it's like scrambled egg and bread. I don't like it, I have eggy shed.
Eggy what?
Which the kids invented. Eggy shed, as in like a garden shed.
Okay.
The kids invented it, it's scrambled egg and then toast in a sort of shed shape over the top.
Oh,
so they're kept separate.
I see.
Anyway, yeah, because I don't like eggy bread. Anyway, we're supposed to have eggy bread, and it's supposed to be a nice family breakfast, and I get downstairs. Eli is in a complete meltdown because he didn't get the bib that he wanted to wear.
Oh, no.
He wanted the bib with the whale on. Jonah had already put it on. So he's having a full-blown tantrum on the floor. And then we managed to have breakfast after, you know, we had to give him a time out. He was just all over the place. Then I was supposed to take the kids out for a bit so Charlotte could do some jobs in the house that we needed to do. Getting him out the door was okay. We went to the shop and we looked at some magazines and I said, well, we're having a little holiday in a couple of weeks. We could buy a magazine for the holiday. And it was very clear and they were very happy. We're not having it for 2 weeks. Fine. They bought the magazine, put it in the buggy. Complete meltdown.
Oh, no.
can I see the magazine? No, you can't see it for 2 weeks now. And they're complete meltdown. We're supposed to be going to the park, pushing the buggy with them both. One stood on the back, one's in the seat. And both kids are going, don't want to go to the park. Don't want to go to the park. I'm like... And I said, we're going to feed rough. The ducks. I said, we're going to feed the ducks as well. I don't want to feed the ducks. I was like, I didn't think we'd raise spoiled children. I know we are, I suppose we are much more privileged than a lot of people in the world. But we tried very hard not to raise spoiled children and children who expect things. And yet going to the park wasn't good enough. Feeding the ducks wasn't good enough. Having a magazine bought for you is not good enough because you can't have it immediately. In the end, I stormed home. I came through the door and Charlotte said, oh, you're back early. And I said, yeah, we didn't go to the park. And I just sat on the sofa. You know, and it's things like that. You know, kids just have their own opinions. Or sometimes, you know, one of them will just be a bit, I won't say naughty because maybe he's a bit young for planned naughtiness, but he just jumps on the other one and sits on his head. And you just find your constant, the stress builds up.
Mm.
Any parent will know that feeling, I think, when the children, they get under your skin and it gets worse and everything gets exaggerated and you get more and more exasperated. And yeah, and it gets to, you know, so on a day when I'm on my own, especially if I've not seen any other adults that I know or spoken to any other adults particularly, it gets to sort of 5:30. And Charlotte generally leaves work about 5:40, gets home about 6:15. And I'm sitting there with the phone going, why haven't you messaged? Why haven't you messaged? Are you on your way home yet? And then sometimes Charlotte has to work a bit later and you'll get this, I'll get to 5:45 and I'm like, you haven't left yet. Where are you? I need you. It's just that last half an hour of the day, you just cannot cope anymore.
It's the worst.
Wow.
Yes. So that's, I guess that's what a bad day looks like. And, you know, there's still fun stuff in the day. There is still laughter. Kids are amazing and ours are lovely. Yeah, and the difficulty is they snap out of it much quicker.
Mm.
They can go from full-blown tantrum to giggling in seconds, and you're still seething, and you've got to snap out of it yourself, really. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that's a bad day, yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you kind of anticipate Charlotte coming home and chatting to another adult, and you also talked about how you sometimes go out, and when they were younger, kind of seeing other adults. So I was wondering, who do you tend to see on a normal day? Do you try and see other adults, or is there a network of other parents that you try to meet up with? Because oftentimes during the week, there are those kind of toddler groups or whatever at church that often kind of help parents kind of see each other as well as kind of looking after their kids at the same time.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever a normal day in our life, actually. We never really personally got stuck into going to the same group every week. And I think that partly links back into being a man. So we did try a few of these things. We did have a few classes we would go to. And generally speaking, I think, you know, you go to these groups. And I used to find I was the only man. And a lot of mums, they didn't know how to speak to you.
Aww.
And I think any man who comes to these groups, men and women are different. There is a man who a dad who I met at our own church toddler group. And we met up outside of the toddler group the other day. We had a lovely afternoon with the kids. And at the end of it, we said it was just so nice to talk to another man.
Sure.
And it's hard to explain that sometimes to people. But I find, generally speaking, I have a whole mix of people. There are places I go, I end up probably talking to the person running the group more than it's maybe the other mums at the group.
Mm.
Quite often they come in pairs or in little groups who know each other already. Yeah, there's a lot of different people that you meet up with. I find I actually ended up meeting up with sort of single people. I've got some single friends who don't have kids and don't work on certain days of the week because of their jobs. So that's quite nice. We've got some friends that we meet up with like that. Retired people as well. We've hung out at retired people's houses and, you know, people from church that we know.
That's great.
So there's a really nice opportunity there just to get to know people, maybe people who don't have kids or people whose kids are grown up but don't have grandchildren yet, particularly who still enjoy spending time with little children. Yes, there's a few people like that. And then we do have some mum friends. We've got a few mum friends that we know. But it takes, yeah, it's taken a bit of time to build up some of those relationships, I think.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Sometimes it's like surprising to hear about minority experiences in places and in people's lives that we don't normally expect. And it's definitely a need for people like you, Robin, who need support and perhaps kind of networks that cater to men and not just women. But at the same time, I think very often kind of pastoral ministries, church ministries find it difficult to, first of all, kind of identify these needs. And second of all, to see a point, to kind of go out of their ways to maybe change the way they phrase things, change the way they run and structure ministries. And very often, because minorities are minorities, it becomes even harder to raise these issues or to even think about these as a real need when it is only a few people. And we see it here, seeing other places as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. And actually, the thing about the wording and the phrasing, the thing that really winds me up is when you get mums and tots.
Mm-hmm. So
or
common.
Music with mummy. And actually, all these groups, there has been a shift, and all these groups do... You know, they welcome anybody, grandma, granddad, dad, everybody. And even, so there is one with mummy in the title, a music class, which says on their flyer, mums, dads, grandparents, all welcome. But the name of the class still has the word mummy in it.
Mm.
And I just, because that's some kind of, I don't know, franchise they've built up, I think. But but there has definitely been a shift. And particularly, you know, in church contexts, some of the groups I feel most welcome ones run by churches.
That's wonderful.
The ones where I feel, you know, people do go out their way to talk to you. And although I said, you know, I generally talk to people running the group, but I've been to toddler groups where the people running the group don't come and talk to you.
Mm.
Oh.
And actually, sometimes you just need to have, how are you? Oh, I'm okay. The kids have been a bit difficult this morning, but we're here now. And that's enough to lift your day sometimes as a parent.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I have been to some toddler groups and sadly one or two run by churches, which have been, you know, walk in the door and they don't really talk to you.
Mm.
I went to one where they waited 2 hours and then eventually approached me and gave me some leaflets for other activities.
Wow. Okay.
And that was basically it. And that is, you know, that is not typical of a lot of these groups. You know, I think the one at our church in particular is really great. I'd also give a shout out to the Woking Salvation Army.
Mm.
Their toddler group is really nice. I've always felt welcomed there. But yeah, you do. Yeah, it's odd for me being, you know, white British average person. To suddenly find yourself as a minority is an interesting, interesting thing. Yeah.
Yes, it's not just for people like dads who are doing the kind of caretaking during the week. It could be kids who don't really have moms in the house. It could be that they're away. It could be other reasons. And it could be very hard for them as well if the kind of midweek groups or like activities are all kind of titled that way. They might feel very much excluded as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, so I only have the kids 2 days of the week on my own. And for me, that's enough. Generally speaking, that's probably my limit on my own 2 days.
Mm.
But also, I think if I was off full time for whatever reason, trying to find things to fill my day with without spending loads of money as well. You know, there's definitely a need for things to be either free or cheap. And again, this is where church toddler groups have really come into their own. Because I have noticed that the church ones tend to be free or cheap, but ones run by, there are people who run them just in village halls as a way to make money. And you go to this,
right.
Oh, it's £4 to come in. And go, oh, is it? Oh, okay. It's free down the road.
Yikes.
So, but yeah, trying to fill your week with things would be really hard, particularly if you feel like there's places that you don't feel particularly comfortable.
Do you think you've seen a perspective shift in British culture in terms of, yeah, the perspective on caregiving fathers? Or do you think we're still kind of stuck in some old ways of seeing things?
I think we're in a transitionary period. There's definitely a shift. You know, as I said, you know, these flyers, even if they had a mummy on it, it still said dads, mums, etc. Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, I've got a lot of respect for you and, oh, you're doing such a good job. Oh, it's lovely to see a dad doing these things. But even that last comment, oh, it's lovely to see a dad doing these things, sort of implies that dads can't generally do these things. And
right.
So I think there is a change. A lot of places are much more welcoming than they probably used to be. Groups have changed their names a bit to be more inclusive. But there is still, I think, a large part of culture still sort of sees these, the man should be out there building houses and chopping down trees or something, and the mum should be at home feeding the children. Mm. Yeah, I mean, we've had, you know, we've had a lot of builders coming in and out of our house the last few weeks. And I feel sometimes when I'm, you know, they're there, you know, knocking down walls and doing manly stuff, and I'm going, get down the stairs now and get your shoes on, and I'm doing that sort of stroppy parent bit. Sometimes I sort of, I do feel a little bit like, what are they thinking of me? Mm. And I shouldn't, and it shouldn't matter, and I love what I do, but it's sort of a, yeah, you know, I'm there wiping bottoms and pulling socks onto kids and trying to pack a picnic, and they're out there earning the money and, you know, demolishing houses.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't feel like, some people still don't get it. They don't understand why you would want to stay at home with your children.
Which is a real shame, yeah. Mm. What is the most encouraging thing that someone has said to you recently? I mean, I think people can struggle to know how to be supportive without kind of still feeding into those old ideas, you know what I mean? Is there anything in particular that has been encouraging that people have said?
I think generally speaking, the nicest times is when people just treat you normally.
Mm.
If it's a mum and they treat you how they would treat another mum or another parent. Because I said, we do have a few mum friends that we've hung out with a bit more recently, and with them, I don't feel like I'm an outsider. It just feels nice. You know, they just treat you like a person. And I think that's the most encouraging thing.
Mm.
And you can still relate to having children. They'll say, oh, how was your morning? And I'll say, oh, for some reason, this happened today. And they'll go, oh, that happened with my child too.
Mm.
Yeah, two weeks ago. And you go, oh, yes. Oh, it must be this. And the conversation just flows.
Mm.
Like it would if it was, I guess, two mums talking about their children.
Right.
Yeah, I think stay-at-home sort of dads just want to be treated normally.
Mm.
They don't need comments about, oh, you're doing such a good job. It's like, I'm doing my job. It's not...
Right, you wouldn't say that to someone, whatever, in a business. Oh, you're doing such a good job with your computing.
Well, you might be, but yeah. But if you wouldn't say it to a mum, don't say it to a dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you would genuinely say to the mum, I have a lot of respect for what you're doing, staying at home with your children, fine. Because, yeah. Any stay-at-home parent, it's really tough.
Sure.
Going out your way to encourage any parent, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah.
And just asking them how they are, how you're doing. Because even on a good day, there's often things where you go, oh, well, apart from it's been a really good day. Because parenting is really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Mm. This is really helpful to know. Sometimes we forget how... It's very subtle, isn't it? And sometimes people might think... Oh, I'm encouraging you. I'm saying these things to make you feel better. But in fact, you just feel even more excluded. You just feel like, oh, I don't fit the kind of social expectations of me. And that really hurts. I was at church the other day and I was sitting with my friend and she tripped a couple days ago. So she was on like kind of crutches. And at the end of the service, there was this lovely woman coming towards us and she just went to my friend and said, I just, this is absolutely beautiful. Like, you know, you're here. And I think it's because she was at the front row and her kid just got baptized. And she came and was having this kind of encouragement, sort of implying, obviously, that she was being very brave, you know, sort of like handicapped and was still kind of like, you know, like going on with lives. And this lady left and my friend and I just look at each other and said, oh, she had this like misunderstanding. Because you're absolutely fine. You just tripped the other day and you probably just have to be kind of walking like this for a few days. That is all.
Oh no.
But that really reminded me a lot of times, and for people who are, that have problems walking and have to be on crutches all the time, they might get that a lot. And it might not be necessarily encouraging to them to hear this so much. They might be thinking, I just want to be treated like a normal person because I am. Apart from having to use crutches, I am exactly the same as everyone else. And it might not be the kind of perfect analogy to what you just described. I think sometimes when we get to know a person's experience a bit more, then we realize, oh, they are just like us, and we are all called to do different things, we're responsible for different things, and we just have to kind of see that as a normal part of life.
Absolutely.
Robin, you mentioned that you were a church worker part-time during the week. And so I was wondering, we've talked a lot about horizontal relationships with other people and good days, bad days. How has your relationship with Jesus helped you through all of these ups and downs, interactions with different people, the good and the bad? How has that kept you going? How has that shaped how you approach parenting as well and your attitude towards it as well?
Yeah, you know, having a Christian faith teaches you patience and forgiveness is a big one. I mean, even with the kids, we, after bath time, we have a couple of stories and then we read the Bible and we say our prayers. And from an early age, we said, is there anything we want to say thank you to God for? But we also say, is there anything we need to say sorry to God for? And is there anything else we want to pray for? So we sort of go for the thank you, the sorry, and the please prayer. And that's actually been really helpful. You know, that whole reconciliation thing is really important. So, you know, the other night, I think I said, is anything we want to say sorry for? And one of our children went, sorry, God, for hitting mummy.
Yep.
And I think that whole reconciliation thing as well comes back to in the moment as well. So when they really push the boundaries and do something repeatedly that they've been told not to do, with one of them in particular, we have to put him in a bit of a timeout just for, you know, 30 seconds or so. And then we come back and we say, help him understand what he did wrong, have a little talk. And then, you know, we say, that's okay. You've said sorry, you know what you've done. And we, you know, I forgive you. Let's have a cuddle. And then that's it. And I think, you know, mirroring that image of Christ's forgiveness for us has really helped, actually, in that sense. In that sort of area, it's been really good. And I think, yeah, just understanding, seeing people as sinners as well, understanding that everyone, nobody is perfect. Everyone has their flaws. So when you go places and people say these things, you don't kick off and go, why would you say that time? You don't have an argument with them. You just, yeah, you just meet them where they are and chat to them and explain to them that it's not Mum's day off. It's I do this every week.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think God has given me some good opportunities as well to talk about, well, to talk about him to people, to non-Christians and stuff. So, yeah.
Do you think there are like distinctive contributions dads can have, like for you to spend so much time with your kids during the week? Do the kids notice, and are there like any unique opportunities because of this situation for the kids and for you?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything unique specifically to me being a man as opposed to a woman. I mean, coming back to what we said about being the primary caregivers, I think there's so much opportunity there to build a foundation, you know, all sorts of little comments, you know, wow, look at that bird. Why has it got a beak? Because God made it with a beak.
Yes.
You know, you can go more into detail of what the beak is for and why a bird has a beak and we have a mouth. But just little things you can say just to remind them that, you know, creation was made by God. So many times, if you don't know the answer, it's great being a Christian as well. You know, when you get the why? So, but why does he have a beak? So he can get worms. But why does he eat worms? Because God made him like that.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to know everything because you can say, well, that was God's choice. But, you know, those opportunities just to instill in them now that as Christians, this is what we believe. Or again, you know, if you've done something wrong, you say sorry. You have to be repentant for what you've done. Talked about death with them. They know a lot more about death, I think, than a lot of children, just because, well, the Bible is full of people dying, let's be honest. And we don't read the full-on, you know, NIV with them yet. We read various age-appropriate children's Bibles. But they don't shy away from death in the Bible. And so we're talking about that. My dad passed away. We talk about that with them. He was a Christian, so we can talk about that. Yeah, there's all those opportunities. Whereas I feel like if they were in childcare 9 till 5, 5 days a week, and then on weekends, one of the parents would go off all day. I'd say, oh, I've been at work all week. I'm going to go and play golf all day. And so they would see one of their parents really for an hour each evening and maybe on a Sunday. And their main input is coming from the secular world.
Right.
So they won't get that input.
Yep.
They might say to someone, a nursery worker, why does the bird have a beak? And they might start talking about evolution theories and things. And we're not going to go down that route in today's podcast, but yeah, I think you can very easily, they could have, I guess, a worldly view on the world as opposed to a Christian view on the world. And you lose that chance in the early days. And obviously, you know, I want them to grow up and come to their own decisions and make their own conclusions on things. Hopefully not brainwashing them, as some people would say, but we are Christians. We have made a promise before God to raise them as Christians. We had them both christened, which we've made that commitment to raise them as Christians. That is what we do. I feel like it would be like if you said we're vegetarians, but you sent them to a nursery where they had to eat meat every day. There'd be a contradiction, and they would grow up saying, well, I ate meat 5 days of the week, why should I be a vegetarian? Whereas as a Christian, you say, well, we are Christians, this is what we do and we believe. When you're old enough to make decisions for yourself, you can choose whether that is what you believe and want to do. But at the moment, you are under our care, we are your parents, this is what we do and this is what we believe. So
I think that's helpful, because I think in recent years, maybe in the last decades, two decades, as we see all these kind of debates over gender and sexuality, the evangelical response is very much to uphold the nuclear families and gender roles. And there's obviously value in that. But very often when we use this language and these concepts about kind of family and their specific roles to play, we can accidentally exclude minority experiences like yours and your role as a dad, and how there's so much similarities between your mom and dad and what they can do, and let alone other types of experience, people who might not be able to experience those nuclear family lifestyle.
Reflecting back on what you said earlier, Robin, I was so struck. You were saying a lot of groups are not really set up for a father and his children, and so you often hang out with single people or retired people. And I think that is also such a Christian witness to your sons and to everyone around.
Definitely.
And I'm so encouraged that you don't have groups set up for you. So you go out and you make a group. You find people who would also be left out in certain respects. And I'm just so encouraged by that. And I think that's a huge Christian witness as well. So thank you.
Yes.
You're right. It's community. We are a church. We are a family. You know, the kids, they love visiting people. They love going up. On my day off, we'll often go into the church office, sometimes to pick something up. They go and say, oh, I want to see who's in the office today. And we go and talk to the ladies who work in the office. And then we go and talk to the intern or various other people around. We touched it to the cleaner the other day.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And then Eli chased the organist around the church with a pirate sword. Like, I think as a church, we don't need to see age. And in the same way, I guess, you know, we've got friends who are old enough to be our parents.
Mm.
And you talk to people who aren't friends from church. We've got friends from university, or Charles got friends at work. And you say, oh, yeah, what did you do on the weekend? Oh, I went out for dinner with some friends. And then you realise those friends that you went out for dinner with are maybe 80 years old. And
right.
You say that to your friends in their 30s, and they're like, what? You went out for dinner with an 80-year-old? I'm like, well, yes, because they're my friend, because we are brothers and sisters in Christ. And it's less strange, I think. And actually, for me growing up, we were always part of the church family. I grew up in a Christian household. We went to church. My parents, my mum was also a children's worker for a bit of time. My dad was basically a church warden. And so we would always be the last to leave on a Sunday morning. So you end up talking to whoever's left,
right.
Whether that's a young person or an old person who's finishing their cup of tea. And we were always around people of different ages.
That's so valuable. And so valuable for children as well, who, as soon as they go to school, they're very much siphoned into these age brackets and don't have very much chance to hang out with other people.
Yeah.
We've covered so much. And in the last 5 minutes, we've talked so much about how living the Christian life is such a privilege, because we get to be part of a family that is so much more than just people who are like us. And so I was wondering if there was any kind of character of Jesus or teaching of Jesus that you've been holding on to recently as you've been parenting, that you could maybe encourage us and leave us with.
Yeah, there's the obvious one that came to mind was Jesus and the children. People bring their children to see Jesus. The disciples say, no, he won't be interested in children. And he goes, no, what are you doing? Bring the children to me. It's a classic story. It's a Sunday school one that you've probably heard 1,000 times. But actually, it's when you think, you know, about a saying about, you know, manly people knocking walls down and chopping down trees. But actually, you can't get a more perfect example of what it means to be a man than Jesus. And actually, I can picture Jesus playing with the children, because that's what he did.
Yes.
They brought the children to him. He wouldn't have gone, you're blessed, and then like, off you go. I just can't see that. He would have got down on their level. He would have smiled at them. He would have chatted to them. He probably would have played games with them or cooed over a baby. I don't know. And I don't want to put words and images that aren't in the Bible onto that. But I think there is something as a dad who hangs out with a lot of children a lot of the time, and and a man who's worked with children his whole career, I can see that now, that whole, I guess that fatherly side, but not the traditional, stern, strict father who sees the children 20 minutes each day. All right, I've seen you now, off you go. He's an involved father for us, and you know, and he modelled how important it was to see and spend time with the children. So yeah, it felt like a bit of an obvious go-to when I thought about this question, but maybe there's nothing wrong with that. Jesus said, bring the children to me, and he hung out with the children, which is parenting is in some ways.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Robin, for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, to hear about your life with your children, your passion for raising them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Thank you to all of our listeners for joining us today as well. We'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Thanks for tuning into the Overtones podcast today. Make sure to subscribe and tune in to the next episode on your streaming platform of choice.
Follow us and share our podcast with your friends on Facebook and Instagram. You can find us on both platforms as Overtones Think Tank.
And if you'd like to get in touch with feedback, comments, or other ideas, our email address is podcast@overtonesproject.com. See you next week!